Welcome to CAU Now on Jazz 91.9 FM WCLK, the radio voice of Clark Atlanta University. CAU Now features news, interviews, and spotlights about what's going on at your Clark Atlanta University. Here now is the host of CAU Now, Clark Atlanta University Director of Strategic Communications and University Relations, Donna Brock.
You're listening to CAU Now with Clark Atlanta University President Carlton E. Brown. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Brown. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Well, I know you're busy, so I appreciate your joining us here. The current economic climate has made financing a college education almost an impossibility for the majority of HBCU students and their families. A May 2013 graduate could conceivably owe in excess of $40,000 in student loan debt. In February 2010, President Obama signed an executive order for the White House Initiative on HBCUs that essentially increased the Pell Grant minimum to $5,710. In fact, Pell Grant funding increased by some $400 million during the president's first term in office. But tell us what else need be done to ease the financial burden of students and their families considering enrolling in college.
Well, I think the first thing to think about is the initial intention of the Pell Grant was to be able to handle the lion's share of the cost of a college education to a student from a poor background. Of course, it has never, ever met that obligation, and it becomes more distant from meeting that obligation each and every year. But it would seem to me and to many others that part of what we need to do is to reconceptualize what it is we mean about providing support for a college education. And it can't simply be to say that everyone should go to a lower cost state institution. In several of our state systems right now, it is not possible for them to accommodate the demand in their own state. And so students are having to find other alternatives inside of every state. So I think that one of the things we need to focus on is why are we doing loans the way that we're doing them, as opposed to perhaps tying the loan qualifications of an individual to the potential earnings of the major that they are pursuing.
Yeah.
You can determine how much would be reasonable for that person to borrow and what a repayment schedule would be given the nature of the profession that they're pursuing. We also must determine which of these fields are critical to the lifeblood of the country and to make sure that we're providing those folks, because it turns out that professions that are critical to the lifeblood are also the lowest paying professions. And we ought to consider that if a person commits to provide the appropriate services in certain professions like teaching over a period of years, there ought to be a level of forgiveness that can work up to and including the full cost of what was borrowed. The third point that I would make is that as a nation, we have to relook the whole function of a college education. If you look at it from a cold, hard dollars and cents standpoint, it is the case that should an individual earn a college education and become a productive citizen, the society actually gains more economically over time than that individual themselves will gain over time. These are the people who make communities work, who purchase homes, who buy more than one car, who go to the high-end grocery stores, who serve on the school boards, who do all the things that make societies work. So the benefit to the society far outweighs the benefit to the individual. And if we financed higher education on that basis, we'd be looking at a better society, we'd be more competitive with other nations, and we would enable people who achieve a college education to begin to immediately impact the society.
So then is the message to those in the White House and on Capitol Hill to really consider what you're calling, which I think is a revolutionary idea, some form of loan forgiveness program or some form of extra funding for those students in those critical issues? And if not that, then what is the message to those on Capitol Hill? How can they help people where the rubber meets the road?
Well, again, the focus has to be not on what we do to benefit individuals, but what we enable individuals to do for the benefit of the nation.
Yes.
And once you conceptualize it in that fashion, now we're looking at a different set of financial parameters and a different set of supports that can, in fact, enable tax funding as well as private funding to have a more protracted impact on the outcomes. So it's an investment.
Yes.
And we will not be competitive with other nations in our college outcomes without changing the way that we structure this investment.
That's absolutely correct. Now, speaking of loan debt, you, in fact, and many of your colleagues in the HBCU community have been grappling with the issue of the Parent PLUS loan decline rate. And I know that here at Clark Atlanta University, that decline rate actually spiked from a traditional 25% to a high of 65%. That is money that generally is given as a gap, to close the gap, we say, so that students can literally pay off those last few dollars to enroll in college. Many parents, because of their credit histories, were declined. And it's created enrollment problems throughout the HBCU community. You had the opportunity to sit with Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan. Tell us where we are at this point in that process.
Well, first, the Department of Education very wisely has admitted, as Arnie Duncan did again the other day when I met with him, that the department blew it, that they made some terrible errors, both in terms of how they went about the process of strengthening criteria and their failure to notify. So the two major criteria that were strengthened, which was whether or not a family has any event of default.
Yes.
So if you look in the African-American community and the number of people involved in home foreclosures, then you must assume there's going to be an indelible, measurable impact on that community.
That's right.
And if you also say that any family that has a debt that is more than 90 days old will also be denied, well, that can be a simple ambulance trip to the hospital because of an accident.
That's right.
Which won't be paid right away. That will be 90 days old while you wrestle with your insurance company, et cetera. And so, again, students were blown out by that also. Where I think we are now is really a very strange place. We understand that the criteria must strengthen. All we had asked for ahead of time was the usual rulemaking, notification, workshop, and training processes take place, and that the community of higher education not be caught by surprise on August 28th at a discovery that these default, that these denial rates are there.
Which was the case this year.
Which was the case this year, which cost us 500 students, creating an $8 million hole in our budget, both not recoverable outcomes.
Right.
The second place that we're at is, given that we know that these criteria must strengthen, we do not have a plan from the federal government going forward about how that will take place. Secondly, some of the very ideas that I mentioned before are those that we put on the table with them. In fact, we've been putting those on the table, I have and some others, for more than a year now, that in fact we have to arrive at a different place as a nation about how we finance education. Finally, you can talk about the impact on the HBCU community, but if you measure it out another way, this is an impact on a certain classification of families. So if you have students trying to go to college from low-income families, this is the impact on them nationwide. It impacts us so heavily, particularly UNCF, because we attract and attempt to educate a significant percentage of our populations as those students. And so that means that that impact is much heavier. Even so, many institutions went into their own coffers to try to maintain these students in schools, and we did too. If we had not been frugal enough to be able to manage that, the impact would have been even greater. But the impact on the lives of young people is what is the major impact. And so we're really talking about how far back have we set the 2020 national goal.
You're listening to CAU Now with Clark Atlanta University President Carlton E. Brown. Clark Atlanta University, where we learn, lead, and change the world. You talk about we are approaching the 25th anniversary of Clark Atlanta University. Of course, the university was consolidated in 1988, but our dual lineage dates back to 1865 with Atlanta University and then 1869 with Clark College, our two parent institutions. You and I both understand and have embraced throughout our lives and our professional and personal lives the value of an HBCU education. But talk a little bit about the relevance of an HBCU in the 21st century economy.
Well, first of all, we are part of the overall fabric of the diversity of higher education in America.
Yes.
Its strength throughout the world has been known as the diversity of institutional type, disposition, and orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have religious-affiliated institutions. We have large and small institutions.
Mm-hmm.
We have institutions that focus on professional programs. We have those that focus in the liberal arts. We have graduate institutions. We have undergraduate institutions. We have two-year institutions. The beauty is, in those time periods when we have done this right, there has been an institution for everyone in the nation that ought to go to college.
Yes.
And it was recognizing that after World War II, mm-hmm. that enabled the nation to arise to the position that it occupied in the world in terms of college completion and the capacity of those college students to move forward. So we are part of that fabric. And when you describe us, yes, we're an HBCU.
Mm-hmm.
We're also a United Methodist affiliated institution. So we have spiritual intent and overlay to our work.
Yes.
We're also a graduate research institution by Carnegie classification,
mm-hmm.
and we do the same work as do any other research institutions. Our major emphases, we have a major center on prostate cancer. We're a major research center. 5 patents in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like 3 more are coming. We're expanding that center, and while I'm already claiming it, my director says he doesn't want to say yet that we are the largest prostate research center in the world, but we're very close to that. So that's just one of our many centers. So we contribute to the society in enormous ways. We provide invention in a number of fields. We provide leadership in a number of fields, whether we're talking about drama and the capacity of one of our graduates to be one of the most prolific producers and playwrights on Broadway, whether we're talking about our impact in the good side of the hip-hop world, where we have people who've been very inventive in how that music plays
mm-hmm.
out and how it impacts the world. Supply chain management, for which we're yeah. known throughout this country. And just had a conversation with 2 of our corporate partners today about how do we get deeper
Excellent.
Involved in these programs. So we produce people at the same level as do other institutions for American higher education and for the society, except we add the uniqueness of a concentration on leadership,
mm-hmm.
character development, and contribution to community. So that's part of our outcome structure.
I think one of the great untold stories of HBCUs nationwide is that it's really not that the concept has never been about African Americans, just people of African American descent. HBCUs have always been diverse institutions. Talk a little bit about the tremendous heritage of Clark Atlanta University. And I love it. Only you can tell this story that when Atlanta University was being created and developed, established, there were some surprising findings by those who came to survey what was happening here on our grounds.
Yes, there was a time when those in Georgia in government and in other areas of the country, excuse me, were concerned that we were calling ourselves a university and, you know, how could they, a few years out of slavery, rise to such a status? And so one of the major moments in our history was the requirement by the governor of Georgia that there be an assessment
mm-hmm.
of the quality and capability of Atlanta University in relationship to reasonable standards.
Mm-hmm.
And appointed to lead that examination was a UGA professor
mm-hmm.
who had recently written several tracts on the inferiority of persons of African descent,
mm-hmm.
where he talked about their intellectual and their physical inferiorities and their moral inferiorities. So he led the team that came to examine our students and our faculty. And he was quoted, and this is a loose version of the quote because I've seen three versions so far. When the week-long examination was over, he basically said he's not understanding how they do this, but he will have to say that these students, these former slaves, actually are getting their Latin and their Greek and their mathematics and their other studies at a higher level and better than those students that he was teaching at UGA at the time. And the point here is this, that the press here has always been about excellence based on national and international standards.
Yes.
We seek to meet or exceed those standards in every endeavor, and that has been the entire history of the place. Mm-hmm. We have done the sociological work with W.B. Du Bois, who literally invented the contemporary version of modern American sociology.
Yes.
And was one of the most prolific thinkers and writers about how one becomes a scholar leader and a scholar activist in terms of taking knowledge and applying it to the larger society.
And that's still very much alive. That is the spirit of Clark Atlanta, the legacy that continues today. Our students are very much scholar activists.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. This has been what we do at all times. So when they begin to engage in community service, that is what it's about. They want very much to be impactful in the larger society. They engage in the political process in deep and meaningful ways and in nonpartisan ways because it is about the process by which they participate in building a stronger society.
I do want to go back to your comment about W.E.B. Du Bois. We would be remiss if we did not mention that we're planning quite a large celebration of his intellectual legacy here at Clark at Atlanta University this February. And I know you've been working very, very closely with Dr. Stephanie Evans, chair of our history department, on much of what is coming together and really what will be a celebration of some of the greatest historians and intellectuals from around the nation. I'm going to turn the mic over to you and let you talk just a moment about what we have planned for the nation that really began here at Clark Atlanta University many, many years ago.
Well, it really did at the turn of the century when Du Bois became a faculty member here. And that became his first most prolific, productive period with his scholarship.
Absolutely.
His second period came in his return under the leadership of John Hope. And again, that's when he wrote his second wave of most prolific works, including The World in Africa and several of the works that have impacted scholarship around the world since that time. It impacts the scholarship of Africans, African-Americans, and whites as they deal with the broad issues of race, social class, cultural content, and how international issues play out. So we've been under the leadership of Dr. Stephanie Evans, whose doctoral degree, by the way, is from the W.B. Du Bois African-American Studies program at the University of Massachusetts Amherst.
And I believe you're somewhat familiar with that program, sir.
I'm somewhat familiar with it as one of the two students who were involved with faculty in its establishment back in the late 60s and early 70s.
Yes.
And so we, in fact, plan. There's the last clause in the charter that talks about the future PhD program. So we're all full circle. I'm a Du Bois student. Stephanie Evans is a graduate of that program. We're here in the place where Du Bois conceptualized so much, including the Niagara Movement that led to the NAACP. So we've been in a year-long study and reclamation process of reclaiming our ownership of W.E. Du Bois and those concepts.
Yes.
It culminates in January with what in the world of African American studies will be a mega event when, in fact, almost all of the luminaries in the field and the leaders of those programs around the country will be in this one place to convene to put the final touches on this year-long study, set our course for continuing the development of the legacy of Du Bois going forward.
Yes.
And we will also, in that time period, very ceremoniously, establish the location of a sculptured bust of Du Bois on this campus. We are reclaiming that legacy from a spiritual standpoint and from an intellectual standpoint.
You spend most of each 24-hour allotment here on campus because we see your car in the president's parking lot. But in your spare time, what books have you read lately? What's on your bookshelf? What are you reading?
I'm rereading an old favorite, which is a book called Personal Knowledge by Michael Polanyi, an English physicist turned philosopher, who basically takes the position that every form of knowing has the same elements to it, whether one is talking about knowing mathematics or knowing God. There's factual data, or data that we accept as fact. There's a process for how we look at and think in this area. And then there is the leap, the leap of faith into the unknown, which is what theory formation or belief in God are both inside that category. So he's saying you can place all ways of knowing on a single continuum with relative powers of factual data and process data versus the heuristics or the belief systems on the other end. But there's all, for all of them, there's this leap of faith into the unknown. When you work certain mathematics formulas, your understanding of the result is literally a leap of faith. It may be tiny.
And for some of us more than others.
And for some of us more than others.
Yes, for us word people.
But I'm doing a reread of that because I've read several books since then that talk about science and religion. I take a fundamental position that if one has disagreements between science and religion, it's good chance they're both wrong. Because, and again, from the Methodist standpoint, the whole idea of loving God with your mind. And that's why the Methodist Church supports higher education.
And Clark Atlanta University.
And Clark Atlanta University is Methodist affiliated. The more you know and learn and study, the deeper you dig, you keep coming back to the amazement of creation. And the deeper you dig, the more amazing it actually is. To really understand the process by which a zygote has come into existence is one of the most amazing notions that you can think of. Out of all of the random and possible things that could occur, how did this happen? And when you work it up to us, the opposable thumb, the larger brain, the walking upright, this is amazing. And so what I'm, what I've studied for most of my life is this very set of notions that what can one come to know in these various fields, and how is it that each field literally brings you back to the same sets of notions over and over again, and they're simply ways of getting at our understanding of this planet. So I'm rereading Michael Polanyi, and I got a large stack next to my desk now that I hope to dig into a little bit over the holidays.
I'm going to ask you to give a final word of wisdom to those wishing to enroll in college, those wishing to have a university experience, and the parents who should be preparing for that. Your word of wisdom to them is as they venture into this new, for them, uncharted territory.
Well, I have several words that I want to share with them. First of all, for parents, if your children are young, it's already too late to start preparing effectively. It's going to cost money no matter what you do, and it's important that the money is invested up front. It doesn't mean that one should not take out loans, but you really have to begin to prepare early. For students, the pursuit of excellence is the pursuit of excellence. You begin early, you end late. You develop the habit of hard work and the pursuit of absolute excellence. Never accept your last accomplishment as an end-all. Third thing, in deciding to go to college, you're really making a number of decisions. You're deciding who you're going to be for the rest of your life. You're deciding where you're going to live to get that done. you're deciding who your next family is going to be.
Yes.
So the college choice has to meet those criteria. And to parents, the magic that happens when the student is enabled to go to the college of his or her choice far exceeds any other advantage you can name about any institution, so that it has to be their place. They have to feel it. They have to make themselves a part of it. And when they do, that's when the enormous growth begins to take place.
Yes.
That's when you beautifully don't recognize them when you see them again, because they're in transformation.
Absolutely. And we are blessed to see that transformation happen daily here at Clark Atlanta University.
Well, we do. This education moves from revelation to revelation.
Yes. Yes, it does. You're listening to CAU Now with Clark Atlanta University President Carlton E. Brown. Clark Atlanta University, where we learn, lead, and change the world.
If you're looking to reinvent and revitalize your career with new opportunities, Clark Atlanta University Graduate Studies offers 38 graduate degree programs in arts and sciences, business administration, education, and social work. If you are ready to pursue your master's, specialist, or doctorate degree, please consider CAU graduate programs. For more information, go to cau.edu and click on Academics. Learn, lead, change.
You're listening to CAU Now with Clark Atlanta University President Carlton E. Brown. Clark Atlanta University, where we learn, lead, and change the world. I want to thank you for joining us. I know there are many, many demands on your time, but I appreciate your being with us.
Well, thank you. You know, for president, most conversations are about what people are trying to get and get done. So to be a president and actually be asked what I think is just a wonderful thing. So I thank you.
Well, we are the better for having heard it. Thank you for being with us.
All right.
Thanks again to CAU President Dr. Carlton E. Brown for joining us on this very special edition of CAU Now. If you would like more information about Clark Atlanta University and our associated programs, I encourage you to visit us online at cau.edu. On behalf of CAU President Dr. Carlton E. Brown, I'm Donna Brock. Thanks for listening to CAU Now.